This week, the House, Republican House, will submit a mature, serious budget for long-term reform of spending in America that will avoid a debt crisis this country is facing in 2 years, according to Mr. Erskine Bowles.
That is Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama on ABC This Week yesterday, signaling a historic proposal expected from House Republicans tomorrow that would cut $4 trillion from the long-term federal deficit, largely by changing the way that Medicare works. Meanwhile, Congress can't even agree on a budget for the next 6 months, with a possible government shutdown looming on Friday. So we will keep talking to Democratic and Republican members of Congress all this week. Today, it's Democrat Jim Himes from Connecticut, Fairfield County. Hi, Congressman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Delighted to be with you.
So we'll talk about the short term. We'll talk about the long term. It looks like the Republicans are actually daring to go first on long-term entitlement reform. Have you seen any details that you want to give us kind of a pre-action to?
You know, I have not seen details. I've heard that they're coming out with a plan that will cut over 10 years $4 trillion, which is about what the Simpson-Bowles Commission, the President's Debt Reduction Commission, found over a 10-year period. And look, I give them credit. You know, one of the terribly disheartening things about this crazy debate that we're having over the current budget is that it plays exclusively in that 12 or 13% of our outlays known as non-defense discretionary. It's a profoundly dishonest debate over 10, you know, billion here, 20 billion there. If the Republicans have put together a proposal that, like the Simpson-Bowles Commission, is about the whole budget, is about entitlements, and is about the tax code, I applaud them for that. Now, I suspect there's going to be plenty in there that Democrats like me are going to object to. We don't want to see our budget balanced on the backs of our least fortunate or most vulnerable people. But look, give them credit for taking on the quote-unquote third rail of politics, if that is in fact what they've done.
You mentioned President Obama's Simpson-Bowles Commission, and that clip from Republican Senator Jeff Sessions mentioned Erskine Bowles, chairman of that commission, as predicting that we would be in a debt crisis, which brings up images of Greece and things like that, in 2 years. Do you accept that number?
Well, you know, comparing the United States to Greece is, to say the least, inflammatory. But the fact is, and I think Republicans and Democrats agree on this, is that we are at a point, you know, the Simpson-Bowles Commission titled their proposal A Moment of Truth. We are at a point where we can no longer rely on the world's good graces. Instead, we need to produce a plan, which isn't just about $10 billion or $20 billion here in non-defense discretionary. It's about the long term. And if I think that if we don't do that, yes, it is probably fair to say that sometime in the next 2 years, you see U.S. Treasury rates rise, and we find ourselves doing this, but doing this because we are compelled to do so rather than because we choose to do so.
Today's New York Times says the plan coming tomorrow would change Medicare, though only for people under 55 years old today. It wouldn't kick in until people under 55 get to Medicare age. It would allow people to choose from different Medicare insurance plans on the open market. Then the government would subsidize those plans rather than the individual. Do you think that could work, something like that?
Something that protects our most vulnerable seniors, that doesn't come down hard on our current seniors, you know, radically or in any way changing what they receive today, which, of course, is a very scary prospect for them in both Medicare and Social Security, which maybe calls on our most affluent to bear more of the burden for their own health care and retirement. You know, now you're talking about a principle that if it's on the table, we can at least talk about. Now, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. What we saw in the House's original proposed budget for the rest of this year was, of course, devastation for things like Head Start, for investments in medical research and that sort of thing. So I'm gonna wait and see what they actually do propose.
All right, listeners, if you want to talk about budgets long-term and short-term with Congressman Jim Himes, Democrat from Connecticut, you can do that right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. One more thing on this before we go to the short term, and I realize this plan isn't even out, but I thought we got another inkling of it on Friday's show when we had Republican Congresswoman Nan Hayworth of New York. She's a physician. And she said that she was complaining about Medicare reimbursements to doctors being too low. And I asked, well, if we need to make a lot of cuts in Medicare over the long term, how can we do that while increasing reimbursements to doctors? And here's part of her answer.
Well, it's a multifaceted solution. It may involve, for example, allowing flexibility in the way, and certainly on Newsmax I said that, flexibility in the way in which doctors and patients treat a given visit or given service that's provided, allowing doctors and patients to work among themselves as far as what the Medicare reimbursement constitutes.
Work among themselves as far as what the Medicare reimbursement constitutes. And I took that to mean that there should be more flexibility for doctors to be able to charge patients above what Medicare actually reimburses them for. So do you think what we're headed for here as, you know, trying to save the debt from the explosion of Medicare costs is actually more burden on senior citizens out of pocket?
Well, I'm not quite sure what Congresswoman Hayworth was saying there. That was a pretty cryptic answer, to say the least. And I would not go to necessarily whatever she meant by flexibility. I would go to the fact that we spend twice per American, 2x, in terms of dollars, than other industrialized countries spend on healthcare, with worse results, with lower longevity, with worse medical outcomes. That's the very definition of inefficiency. So where I get really interested is, if you've got a system that is that incredibly inefficient, are there ways to get us in line with, let's say, other industrialized countries? The OECD average is half of what we spend per capita. Could we get the same results we get today and spend half the money? Theoretically possible, right? So now you're talking about more efficient means of delivery, what we're talking about with these accountable care organizations where doctors actually work together, electronic medical records, so a hospital on one side of a city can get the records that perhaps were taken the week before on a senior citizen at another hospital, all kinds of ideas, some of which, many of which, frankly, were included in the healthcare reform that passed a year ago.
So let's talk about the current situation. You've been doing town hall meetings in your district, and yours is a swing district. Republican Chris Shays represented it for many years before you. And I read that at one of those town hall meetings last week, you predicted that there is a greater than 50% chance of a government shutdown this Friday. Did I get that right?
You got that right, and I certainly felt that way and continue to somewhat feel that way. There has been some progress, Brian, in the last week or so. I think both parties are realizing that they may not be able to predict exactly which party is going to bear the brunt of the blame for a shutdown, but that Americans are going to probably blame Congress as a whole and therefore both parties. The question here, of course, and Brian, as I've said a number of times this morning, you know, the whole concept of the, you know, is it $60 billion or $30 billion in cuts, which seems to be the spread right now between the Republicans, is such a profoundly dishonest treatment of the much larger issue. But nonetheless, nobody wants to see a government shutdown. And this really highlights one issue. If we avoid a government shutdown on Saturday, it will be because John Boehner has, at great long last, figured out a way to kind of get control of his caucus. The Republican caucus passed a short-term budget resolution a week and a half ago only with Democratic support because Boehner lost 54 of his people. He needs to figure out a working majority, which probably means cutting loose the more radical activists on his right wing, the quote-unquote Tea Partiers, and therefore figuring out how many more moderate Democrats he needs to get things done and moving forward on that basis, which is probably a good thing. That probably leads to more middle-of-the-road policy than what we've seen out of the Republican majority in the last couple of months.
And are you eager to count yourself among those moderate Democrats who would vote yes on a budget with some of the Republicans, leaving on the side then both the Tea Party members on the right and a lot of other Democrats from our area on the left? We had Congresswoman Yvette Clark from Brooklyn on, who voted no on that continuing resolution the other week. I think Gerald Nadler voted no. Congress folks like that, if they're going to vote no, as this is too deep, and you're going to vote yes with the Boehner majority in the Senate, that's an okay place for you to be?
Well, obviously, all depends on what's in the proposal. But I am on record as having said that, and this is not an easy thing to say because there's a lot of things in there that I don't like, but I'm on record as having said that if it came to a vote, I would vote in favor of the Simpson-Bowles proposal. I don't know how many members of Congress have said that. And look, that's a package of bad news. There's nothing in Simpson-Bowles that is fun to talk about or that pleases your constituents, but it is a comprehensive and relatively fair plan for fiscal sustainability. So, look, if the Republicans can produce a budget for 2012 that has intelligent cuts, cuts to wasteful programs, cuts to subsidies, agriculture, et cetera, that doesn't hurt our most vulnerable populations, our poor, our elderly, and that makes the investments in things like transportation and education that are absolutely critical to the future prosperity of this economy, yeah, then we're talking.
We have calls coming in on the short-term budget. We have calls coming in on the long-term budget. Frank in Middlesex County, you're on WNYC. Hello, Frank.
Yes, both of you, thank you so much for your time this morning. I have a quick question. I have been following this deficit discussion for the last couple of months. And, Congressman, there's a lot of talk about cutting things that are very, very important, but the 800-pound gorilla in the...
Whoops.
Hello.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Let's try. We lost Frank there for a second. Let's see if I can get him back. Frank, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you were just about to reveal the big elephant in the room, and it is?
Yeah. The big elephant in the room is defense spending. Why in the world aren't we tackling that, Congressman? Why do we need to spend so much money when we don't have, aside from Al-Qaeda, which is poorly organized, a real enemy in this world? Why is that so big a part of our budget, and why aren't we cutting that?
Frank, I almost agree with you. I actually think that the 2,000-pound elephant in the room is health care costs and Medicare, but I agree with you that the 800-pound gorilla, you know, the large beast, the second-largest beast in the room is defense spending. Look, we're spending almost $800 billion every single year on the Pentagon, on our intelligence, on Homeland Security. That is more money than every other country on the planet combined spends. And that's obviously not a sustainable thing. Neither are three now combat actions around the world. Not sustainable. And you're right, Frank. If we're going to be serious about long-term sustainability, we're going to do, frankly, what Secretary Gates proposed. He himself proposed $130 billion in cuts to the defense apparatus. There is a lot of waste there. We need to rethink our role. We need to rethink our role as the world's policeman, as Johnny on the spot who can jump in at any time and any place because we can no longer afford it. And the good news is that there's actually room for that now. When a Republican like Bob Gates, Secretary of Defense, makes proposals, when a guy like me, a Democrat, can suggest that we need to make those cuts without fear of being called soft on terrorism, soft on communism, soft on whatever, we've actually got a little room to have that very important conversation.
So I see that one of the actual dynamics this week is going to be that the Republicans in Congress are going to try to preserve more military spending than the Pentagon has even asked for. So you get the Republican defense secretary, Robert Gates, being more conservative on what, in fiscal terms, conservative in terms of what he's asking for Pentagon spending than the members in the Republican delegations in the House. Do you think that's going to be a big deal going forward to Friday and hammering out a final agreement to avoid a shutdown?
Look, it's just crazy. It is simply crazy, again, when we're spending more than every other country on the planet combined on our security, to say that we should spend more. Look, you can make that argument, but then you can't make the argument that you're serious about deficit reduction. You can't then turn around and say, I want to keep your taxes really low. You can't then turn around and say, I also want to invest in highways and railways and schools. So I don't think it's easy to make that argument. I think it's wrong. Anybody who has ever set foot in the Pentagon knows that is one of the corners of the government where there is very significant waste and duplication, which is, by the way, not to take anything away from the superb performance of our military, but we have a massive apparatus there that, like every other part of the government, needs to come to the table and say, we're going to get a lot more efficient.
Lenny in Glenville. I almost said Glenny in Lenville, but it's Lenny in Glenville, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lenny.
Thank you for taking my call. Three issues. Number one, Social Security. And I think if you do anything to Social Security, you're going to deserve the government itself, because the government uses Social Security heavily to borrow from. Now, Social Security is a combination of employers and employees putting money in up to a certain limit. So if there's not enough money to cover it, the easy thing to do is raise the cap. Why doesn't anybody ever talk about just raising the cap? That'll take care of Social Security. If you screw with it, what's going to happen is the government, again, will find themselves in a problem, because the base of the pool of the money will not be there for the government to borrow against. Number two, as far as infrastructure is concerned, it's a hard row to hoe, but you have to add a tax to all transportation, and that tax to the transportation should be used strictly for the infrastructure. Number three, Medicare. Again, you have to increase taxes on the people who can afford to pay for it, do away with taxes on the people who can least afford to pay for it. And in that sense, it'll be fair to everybody.
Lenny, let me ask you about the other way that I think the Republicans are going to go at Medicare, which is asking wealthier retired people to accept less Medicare, to have to pay more Medicare. You're talking about taxes on the working people. I think they're going to ask the retired people who have money not to take the same level of Medicare benefits as lower income retired.
If you can afford it, then you should pay for it.
And I'm going to leave it there. You put a lot on the table. So there's Congressman, one of your constituents, who thinks very deeply about these things. And actually, I think we can go through his 3 points. I think they're all really interesting. Raise the cap on Social Security taxes. In other words, Social Security taxes stop after you make, I think it's $106,000 in the year. Raise the cap so that we keep taxing income at the higher incomes for Social Security. I doubt that's going to be in the Republicans' proposal tomorrow, but do you think that's going to be a main source of partisan fight?
Lenny is right about that. Raising the cap is one of the smart things you could do to put Social Security on a more sustainable path. We haven't talked a lot about Social Security. Unfortunately, Social Security gets demagogued a lot because it's a political device to scare our seniors and say Social Security is in terrible trouble and whatnot.
Although reading between the lines of what I've seen in the press so far about what Paul Ryan's going to unveil tomorrow, they're not really going to go after Social Security so much, maybe because it's, you know, such a political hot potato if they do, and maybe not demagogue it so much as being less sustainable than it actually is, but really focus on the health insurance entitlements. Do you think so?
Well, that would be wise. I mean, that would be wise because Medicare presents a much more significant long-term problem than Social Security does. The numbers are about $32 trillion in unfunded liabilities associated with Medicare and about $8 trillion in unfunded liabilities Social Security. So that would be wise. But, you know, Lenny's right. Look, if Social Security does not need to be the quote-unquote third rail. In 1983, Reagan and Tip O'Neill got together and raised the cap and made a couple other adjustments, and it worked. And it wasn't easy to do, but mechanically it's fairly easy to do. We will. One area where Lenny is actually wrong, though, is that the Simpson-Bowles Commission did propose raising the cap and a very gentle raising of the retirement age over a period of about 40 years. So I do think that those two ideas, and perhaps others like limited means testing, will be very much on the table when we do have the discussion about Social Security.
All right. Let's get one more caller in here. Jeff in Fairfield. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Right to the point.
Okay. I'm a constituent of Congressman Himes, and we're talking about the weight of the gorillas in the room. I think the 8,000-pound gorilla is I don't think you can be serious about reducing the deficit when you first give away $1 trillion in tax cuts, and then Exxon and Bank of America and GE and others pay no taxes but get taxpayer money back. They get rebates. How can that go on? How can we even talk about the budget until that's corrected?
Congressman, are you on board?
That's a very, very good question, and I'm hearing it a lot because, of course, GE, which rose to prominence in the last week or so, was, showed that they paid no corporate taxes, I guess, last year. So people are very, very angry about that. And there's two separate issues there, and I think Jeff is directionally right on both. One, we as a people are paying less as a percentage of our income, as a percentage of GDP, in federal taxes than we have since the Eisenhower administration in 1958. So those who propose extending permanently the 01 and 03 tax cuts, are saying that we're going to keep receipts lower than they practically have been ever at a time when our country is getting older and when demands on the system associated with Medicare and Social Security and other safety net programs are likely to go up, not down. We also know the price tag of making those tax cuts permanent. It's roughly $4 trillion over 10 years. So believe me, elected officials would love to say we're going to keep your taxes that low for the next 10 years. But if you're going to say that, you need to find $4 trillion in cuts to make that happen. On the corporate taxes, look, that our corporate tax code is a disaster, right? We've got the second highest corporate tax rate in the world, but we've got this jungle of credits and deductions and loopholes that allow for our corporations to pay a much, much lower effective rate. And so you see things like corporations paying no or little taxes. So the answer there is clear. Do, in the spirit of Simpson-Bowles, reduce the rate so it's more competitive internationally, so that corporations don't see the tax necessarily arbitrage of moving operations to Ireland or to lower tax havens, but then get rid of the loopholes and the deductions and the credits that make such an unholy mess of the tax code.
We're just about out of time, Congressman Himes. Anything else you want to say? I see that you've been working with some fellow Democrats on reviving the budget process itself. So I don't know if you want to talk about that or whatever on the way out.
Sure. Look, I mean, we're having two conversations right now. One is substance, which is, what do we do about taxes next year and over the course of the next 10 years? What do we do about spending and entitlements? And that's all, an important discussion. But then there's the question of process. In our past, in particular during the Clinton administration, the House had very aggressive PAYGO rules, basically said that if you wanted to spend more or tax less, both of which, result in either outflows or less money received by the government, you had to pay for it. If you wanted to start a new program, you had to either cancel an old one or you had to have the guts to raise the taxes to pay for it. Those rules have been weakened over time, and so we're proposing bringing them back in a very strong way. We're proposing making it a lot more clear to Americans where their tax dollars are going. There's an awful lot of people out there running around thinking that 10% or 15% of the federal budget is foreign aid. The answer, of course, is it's less than 1%. And just educating the American people, giving them a Social Security-like annual letter about where their dollars are going would make for, I think, a much more informed and probably constructive discussion about an issue which, let's face it, we're going to be having, and we always have had, off into the future. A democracy is one of the things about electing your representatives is that your representatives have a natural bias to say, I want to give you this really cool program, or I want to keep your taxes really low. That's why you need a process that makes that more difficult than perhaps people who are looking for votes would have it be.
Well, it's going to be an interesting week in Washington with the big long-term debt reduction proposal coming from House Republicans tomorrow and the possible government shutdown on the short term on Friday if they can't make a six-month budget agreement. We'll keep talking to members of Congress from both parties, especially in our local delegation all week. I thank Democratic Congressman Jim Himes from Fairfield in Connecticut for being part of that today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the New York Times brand new op-ed columnist. Did you see his first op-ed column on Saturday? Joe Nocera. Stay with us.